Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
There are people today who have been jaded through experiences with religion, and therefore they are extremely cynical when it comes to any truth claim, especially a truth claim that's connected to faith. Perhaps you know someone like that. Here's the question: how do we respond to the cynic?
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his series, Jesus Encounters. Join us as Pastor Brian begins his teaching on John chapter 18, verses 23 through 38, as he examines an encounter between Jesus and the cynic. Now, here's Pastor Brian.
So we continue today with our series, Jesus Encounters. And as we get into our teaching today, I just wanted to just kind of remind you of the kind of the purpose of this series was twofold. First of all, I felt that this series would be hopefully good to speak right to people that are in these, you know, different places that we see represented by the people that encountered Jesus. So we saw the encounter with a religious person, and how even though Nicodemus was, you know, this pillar in the Jewish community as a religious leader, how Jesus said that wasn't enough. He needed to be born again. Then we saw the woman at the well, and, you know, representing those who thirst. And we saw the lame man and the woman that was taken in adultery. So all of these different people that Jesus encountered, of course, my first objective was to apply that to people who might be listening. Either they're here listening, or maybe they're listening through radio or internet or whatever. But the second purpose in doing this series was to give us just a fresh picture of how Jesus deals with people, and hopefully to encourage us, but also to help us as his ambassador, so to speak, to represent him well to the people that we come into contact with. So we've been looking at, you know, these different people, as I said, with those two primary things in mind. So today we come to this story, looking at Pontius Pilate and the conversation that he and Jesus have there. And I've entitled the message today, Jesus and the Cynic. And I think that this is very applicable in our day and age. There are many cynical people in the world around us today. And so Jesus, he wants to reach the cynic as well. He wants to appeal to the cynic. Now, a cynic is a person who has been jaded by experience, and their experience has caused them to be very suspect of any claim of virtue or goodness or even truth. A cynic is the kind of person who, at the suggestion that you might have, you know, perhaps true love, or there might be absolute truth, a cynic is a person that just sort of, you know, they roll their eyes, they sort of shake their head, they snicker, that anyone would actually think that is even a possibility. The difference between a skeptic and a cynic is that the skeptical person, usually their problems are intellectually based. So if it's a matter of needing information, it's a matter of needing to get the facts. So sometimes a skeptic, once they become aware of the facts, they can move away from their skepticism. It's more of a head issue. But the cynic is different, because the cynic is a person who's, it's more of a heart issue. It's more of something, they have seen something that has jaded them, and as a result of that, they've become, in a sense, they've become biased, and therefore they've lost their objectivity. So Pilate was a cynic. You see, Pilate knew firsthand the intrigues and the corruption of Roman and Jewish politics. And he had also seen up close and personal the underbelly, if you will, of Judaism. And now remember, the Jewish claim, and it's a legitimate claim, was that Judaism was the religion of the one true God, Yahweh. But the priest and the leaders of the nation were so thoroughly corrupted that Pilate, having firsthand experience with that, would really just completely dismiss or scoff at, or he would roll his eyes at the suggestion that what he saw there could have been true. And so for Pilate, the idea of absolute moral and spiritual truth was in the end a joke. And there are people all around us like that today. There are people today who have been jaded through experiences with religion, and therefore they are extremely cynical when it comes to any truth claim, especially a truth claim that's connected to faith. Perhaps you know someone like that. Here's the question: how do we respond to the cynic? Do we just leave them alone? Just say, well, you know, there's no way they're ever going to listen to a word we say. There's no ground of appeal to them. What do we do with the person who is a cynic? Well, I believe that we give them the truth, but not just the truth philosophically. We give them the truth incarnationally. And let me explain what I mean by that. Giving them the truth philosophically, I think that we should challenge people who say that there is no such thing as truth or absolute truth. I think we should challenge the relativism in the culture. I think we should push back against that with good philosophical arguments, and there certainly are plenty of good philosophical arguments for that. Now, one of the main philosophical debates in the culture today, and it's a debate that's been around a long time, is whether truth is relative, which means whatever each individual or the culture collectively believes to be true is the truth, or is truth objective and absolute, which means that the truth is outside of us, it is fixed, and it is unalterable regardless of what we think or feel. Now, we're actually at a point in Western civilization where there's a new idea now that's being floated of post-truth. And this is the extreme end of relativism. Post-truth is the idea that truth is whatever you feel it to be, regardless of the facts. So it used to be that, somebody might think the truth was one thing, but then the facts would push back against that. And whether they agreed or not, they kind of had to concede that, okay, well, these are the facts. But now, post-truth, and it's not just a thing that, you know, a few crazy people are thinking here and there. It's a thing that a lot of people are thinking. The Oxford Dictionary actually, they placed the word post-truth in the dictionary and gave a definition, which is truth that is not based on fact, but based on what a person felt was true, regardless of the facts. So that's pretty crazy in and of itself. But that's the place that we have arrived at in our culture. So I do think that there's a legitimate place to push back against that. I think we should push back against that. But here's the problem. The problem is, even when you push back against it, a lot of times you just end up in a polarized situation, because even though people will concede that it doesn't really make sense practically, they still will tenaciously hold on to it. The most ardent moral relativist on any university campus The person who says, you know, whatever is right in your own eyes, nobody can tell you what's right or wrong. Nobody can judge you. You can, whatever, you know, whatever you believe to be true is true. The person who holds most strongly to that will simultaneously tell you in no uncertain terms that racism, sexism, homophobia, that all of this is wrong for everyone. But the problem is, well, if relativism is true and you decide what's right or wrong, then how do you say that the person who holds to these particular ideas is wrong? So even those who hold tenaciously to a moral relativism, they recognize the problem philosophically and practically, but it doesn't matter. They still hold to it anyway. So since that's the case, like I said, I think it's good to push back against it, but you might end up just in, you know, this sort of endless pushing back and forth and never gain any ground. The thing that we need to remember, especially us, we need to remember that truth is not just propositional. Truth is not just in that abstract philosophical sense. We need to remember that truth is incarnational. And the incarnational truth is no one other than Jesus Christ himself. We can't forget that. So in our dealings with the cynical person, we need to always bring Jesus into the equation. Incarnational truth brings a living person into the equation. And we can't afford to not do that. A friend of mine named Andy Bannister, who wrote a book called The Atheist Who Didn't Exist. Great book, by the way, if you want to read a fun book on the subject of atheism. Andy said this recently in a tweet that I read. He said, the central claim of the Bible is that truth is a person to be known, not a set of facts to be memorized. See, that's something that we need to remember. At the end of the day, ultimate final truth is a person to be known. So you see, if I'm in a conversation, or if I'm in a debate, or if I'm trying to convince somebody who holds to this idea of relativism, if I'm trying to convince them that there is absolute truth, like I said, I might go back and forth with one argument after another, but that can largely just be a waste of time. There has to be a moment where we bring Jesus into that conversation. Now, I had firsthand experience with this many years ago. I was traveling from London to Oxford. I was on a coach traveling. I was sitting next to a guy, and we struck up a conversation as we were heading to Oxford, and I started to talk with him, and somehow, I think I initiated the conversation in as much as I was, you know, hoping to share the gospel with him, but we ended up just getting onto the topic of whether there was absolute truth or not. And he was a very sharp guy. He was well-educated. It was obvious from his arguments and from just his ability to articulate and so forth. And we sat there for about 40 minutes and just went back and forth, just sort of sparring with one another on a kind of a philosophical level about whether there was absolute truth. And I got to a point where I was just so frustrated internally. I was just thinking to myself, you know, I am getting nowhere with this guy. You know, everything I come up with, he's got some sort of a response to it. And at a certain moment, I remember just sort of, you know, there's a pause in the conversation debate, and I just sort of closed my eyes and just said, Lord, just show me, help me know where to go here. And the Lord just said, well, why don't you bring me into this conversation? I thought, oh, that's a good idea. Didn't think of that. And so anyway, I said to him, I said, well, look, you know, you say that there's no such thing as truth and so forth. I said, but listen, Jesus Christ claimed to be the truth. And I'm actually going to take the word of Jesus as authority over your word. Now, here's the amazing thing that happened. Once I brought Jesus into the conversation, everything immediately changed. And what I ended up finding out after the conversation continued is that this guy was a Christian as a young person, and he had lost his faith. And he had, I just think by the things, you know, that he insinuated, that he had gone off into a lifestyle that he knew was not acceptable to God, and he just had embraced that. But as we began to just talk about the claims of Jesus, in the end, he began to really soften up. And there was a point in the conversation where he actually got choked up when he started to tell me about his previous experiences as a young man, and as a Christian at the time. And so, to make a long story short, by the end of our journey to Oxford, and as we parted from one another, he said, you know, I really have to think about everything you said, and I want to go back and I want to just revisit the Bible and what, you know, Jesus had to say. And so for me, that experience illustrates the kind of thing that I'm talking about. Because, like I said, there are lots of cynical people today, and they're especially cynical toward religion. And oftentimes they're cynical toward the church. And you mention the church, or you mention Christians, and maybe they've seen hypocrisy up close and personal, like Pilate did. Maybe they've even been burned by the church, or they had a family member who had a bad experience. So they're jaded and they're cynical. How do you even begin with a person like that? Well, you've got to just go straight to Jesus. Because, you know, the truth of the matter is, there are lots of people in the culture who are turned off by the church and by organized religion, as they sometimes refer to it, but they're interested in Jesus. They're intrigued by Jesus. He, to them, is a mystery. And we have to remember that we are preaching Jesus Christ. We're not preaching our church or our denomination or even Christianity in the, like, a creedal sense. Of course, we believe in everything the creeds say, but we don't want to present the faith just merely as these, like Andy said, as these facts to be memorized. We have to present the faith as a living person. And that's what happened in the story here that we read about. Pilate is the cynic. And there, as Jesus is brought before Pilate, and Pilate begins to question him, Jesus just takes him right to the heart of the issue, and that is the issue of truth. Look at verses 37 and 38 again. Pilate therefore said to him, "Are you a king?" Well, let me back up. Let me go to verse 33. Then Pilate entered the praetorium again, called Jesus, and said to him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus answered him, "Are you speaking for yourself about this, or did others tell you this concerning me?" Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight so that I would not be delivered to the Jews. But now my kingdom is not from here." Pilate therefore said to him, "Are you a king then?" Jesus answered, "You rightly say that I am a king. For this cause I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world, that I should bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice." Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" So Jesus just takes him right to the central issue, the truth. Now, Jesus, when I was saying earlier about incarnational truth, Jesus is. He is incarnational, means in the flesh. Jesus is the embodiment of the truth. And we know that from many of the statements of Scripture, the statements of Jesus himself. Remember in John 14:6, the famous passage, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." So Jesus claims there to be the truth. But when he claims to be the truth, what does that entail? What is that all about? Well, there are a number of things, and I want to just briefly walk us through these things. He is, number one, the truth about God. There's a great mystery surrounding God, right? There's all kinds of theories and ideas and confusion. You know, who is God? is there a God? If there is a God, what is he like? Well, Jesus, he's the truth about God because he is, as the writer of Hebrews tells us in the first chapter, Jesus is the brightness of God's glory. He is the exact representation of his person. He is the image of the invisible God. And Jesus himself would say in that same context there in John chapter 14, he would say to Philip, who said, Lord, show us the Father and we will be satisfied. Jesus said, have I been with you so long, Philip, and you have not recognized me? He that has seen me has seen the Father. So you see, it's through Jesus that we find out the truth about God. We see God in Jesus. We see who the Father is in Jesus. And through Jesus, we see that God is full of mercy and he's full of grace toward sinful men and women. As A.W. Tozer put it, he said, the penitent will find him merciful. The self-condemned will find him generous and kind. To the frightened, he is friendly. To the poor in spirit, he is forgiving. To the ignorant, considerate. To the weak, gentle. To the stranger, hospitable. And so Jesus is the truth about God, but he's also the truth about mankind. You see, Jesus didn't only come to show us what God is like, but he came to also live out what God intended for us as human beings. So Jesus is the perfect representation of God, but he's also the perfect representation of mankind. And what do we see with Jesus? We see that man was created to live in a loving, personal, father-child relationship with God. That's what Jesus shows us. Remember at that point where Jesus, it says it, and he cried out, Abba, Father. And that's that intimate expression that a child would speak toward their father. So Jesus comes to show us that this is what man was intended to be, living in a relationship with God, having this parent-child relationship. You know, even thinking of just those terms, you know, father-child, parent-child, of course, the mother reflects some of the attributes and the nature of God. You know, when you have a father and a mother, you've got the combined sort of attributes of God. You've got, generally speaking, you know, the strength and the firmness of God seen in the father. You've got the tenderness and the compassion and the love seen in the mother. And those things are blended together in God. But I was thinking just about the whole picture of the father-child relationship. And, you know, sometimes that might sound a little bit childish. Well, you know, father, child, I mean, come on, I'm a grown man now. But you know, isn't it true that with our children and even with our parents, we never really outgrow that relationship? It remains the same. I just spent the week with my dad who came to visit. And, you know, there are just these moments where it was, you know, to me, it was just so funny in a good way how he still refers to me with these affectionate, endearing terms like he did when I was a little boy.
For the month of February, Back to Basics Radio is offering a book titled Why Grace Changes Everything by Chuck Smith. Grace, it's a word we all love to hear, but do we really know what this word means? Without it, our lives can be dry and dusty. But when grace comes, it transforms our lives into something rich and beautiful. In this deeply relational book, noted Bible teacher Chuck Smith explores 12 great themes of God's unending, beautiful grace. With a passion of a man whose own life has been transformed by this gift, Pastor Chuck clearly explains that we are not bound to God by a huge list of do's and don'ts, and that our mistakes will never alienate us from God. But rather, our relationship with God isn't based upon our own efforts, but it's based solely on his unchanging love for us. We encourage you to call us right now at 1-800-733-6443 or visit us online at backtobasicsradio.com to discover Why Grace Changes Everything by Chuck Smith. And when you give a gift to Back to Basics, we'll send you this book as our way to say thank you. We really do appreciate your generous support of this ministry. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue tomorrow with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we continue our series, Jesus Encounters. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.